right. At least they didn't milk it for a month. Will he join the Judgment Day? Will he not join? Oh, God. So stupid. What's even dumber is 2 hours into Raw, and we have video in the back of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn still arguing about Jey Uso, like little babies. And it's not their fault. It's the writing. How do you take Seth Rollins seriously when he's in the back and he's all broken and he's pretty much having a meltdown, but right before he has that meltdown, he's wearing the goofy glasses? You know, imagine if somebody's dying in the street, please help me, and you got those goofy glasses on. Yeah, it's not easy to take the guy seriously, but overall, not a bad episode of Raw tonight. For those that may have missed it, if you read the results, I don't think you really missed all that much. A little bit of storyline development. Remember, we have WWE Fastlane coming up. I think it's October 7th. So they are starting to put matches together. I think the one that is going to pleasantly surprise a lot of people out there is a match that we talked about last week. And, I mean, I don't know why people are all of a sudden with toxic shock syndrome because Chad Gable lost a match. You know, this is not the Zelina Vega with Rhea Ripley moment. This is not the Sami Zayn, Roman Reigns moment. This is not the Mustafa Ali, Gunther moment. You know, no, Gunther is the evil bad guy. And when the good guy gets two opportunities and loses, now you got to scrape and claw and try to find another tree to climb on. While the evil Gunther does a worked interview with a media site and says, you know, I was laughing at Chad Gable's children. And people actually report it as fucking news. I mean, we are in bizarre land. Ciampa versus Gunther. See, the reason why so many people out there didn't see it coming is because they never saw the match at Stand and Deliver between these two guys. Why would you randomly have Ciampa get involved with Alpha Academy last week? You know, because they want to introduce Ciampa as the next viable opponent for Gunther. And today, especially after Ciampa taking care of Giovanni Vinci, who is now one more step closer of being booted out of Imperium, it's going to be Ciampa versus Gunther. That's the next match. That's the next feud. Sorry, guys. With all due respect, you're not going to get that emotional hot chocolate that you think you're going to get all the time. If you follow a lot of these people, in a perfect world, Roman would have lost the belt a long time ago. Rhea would have already lost the belt. Gunther would have already lost the belt. No. Wrestling is supposed to break your heart sometimes. All right, welcome to this Raw post show. I am Don Tony. What's today's date? The 18th of September. Couple of quick plugs. And if you check out the synopsis, you get a good idea as far as what we're going to talk about tonight. If you are interested, Tuesday night, 8 o'clock p.m., I am going to bring back the watch party once again. I will be moderating. You will have me and others in the live chat. We'll all watch NXT together tomorrow. Pretty good lineup. Dominic Mysterio versus Carmelo Hayes. No titles on the line, just bragging rights. Tyler Bate and Butch. Yes, that Butch. Going at it, the Global Heritage Invitational. Joe Coffey and Joe Coffey, silent, you know, person in this tournament. Some people think he actually may end up winning it all, taking on Duke Hudson. Roxanne Perez versus, my God, what Lola Vice has done so far. If you don't watch NXT on a regular basis, you're missing something special, because someone who never had an ounce of pro wrestling before she signed with WWE. I think her real name is Valerie Lareda. She is fucking nailing it. And she has a nice little challenge tomorrow. And Becky Lynch will be appearing. And speaking of Becky Lynch, you know, I know a lot of the whiny heinies last week thought, How could you do that to Tiffany Stratton? You're burying her. How could you do that? That's bullshit. Blah, 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 blah. How do you put the belt on Becky Lynch? My friends, here is highlights of Becky Lynch and Tiffany Stratton at WWE house shows over the weekend. And yes, trying to be a little bit cocky, you know, showing each other up. But Tiffany Stratton is learning from one of the number one talents in women's wrestling today. This is an opportunity for Tiffany Stratton that she is bottling it. She is absorbing it. This is making Tiffany Stratton a hell of a lot better. And props to Becky Lynch, who wants to be part of this, who wants to actually do this. So for the people out there, I mean, again, most of those people out there, it's the emotional hot chocolate. You know, they don't see the bigger picture here. But, you know, Tiffany Stratton is still, you know, new. She's still new. But as she goes along, she's going to put it together and put it together. And a couple of years from now, it's going to be really interesting to see what she does. But, you know, you look at these highlights, she looks like she belongs. She looks like she's getting more confident. And I think that's a pretty cool thing to see. So you could go online and you could see the match. We had to chop it up, you know, for streaming purposes. We don't want to get in trouble. All right. Before we get into a little bit more about Raw, a couple other little tidbits, news, not news, little discussion as well. I want to remind everyone, last Monday's show, I'm not going to make a big deal about it. There's no reason to make a big deal about it. But did you see all the websites today? Matt Riddle was expected to be back at Raw tonight. But unless something changes, it doesn't look like he'll be on the show. What this means is anybody's guess. He could have opted to no-show. WWE could have sent him home. This is PW Insider. This is one of the top wrestling news outlets out there. How much fucking clearer did I have to say it last week? I spoke directly to the M&Ms, that I call them, Misha and Matt Riddle. He is out 2 to 6 weeks with an inner ear infection. Last night on a sit-down, I said, I don't even think Matt Riddle is needed for this Monday's Raw because the whole thing was going to be about Drew McIntyre doing a little bit more of an asshole towards Jey Uso. Will Jey join Judgment Day or not? And now Matt Riddle comes back. Bro, why didn't you help him? Bro, I know we had problems with him, bro, but, you know, the Judgment Day, that's where this is going. It's not brain surgery. But we knew that Matt Riddle was going to be gone 2 to 6 weeks. That's what we said last week. I stuck with it. And again, people making controversy, that's not needed. There's no controversy here. The guy has bronchial issues and a double ear infection. And WWE told him, get better, then you come back. 2 to 6 weeks. I don't know how much clearer to say that, but in fact, no joke, I actually talked to Misha earlier today about it. And honestly, I'm not going to speak for them, but I'll say this. You know, Matt Riddle is fully aware that there's wrestling news sites out there that won't report the accurate news, that just want to keep the controversy. And you know why? It's for the hits and the views. Even your favorites do it, my friends. So there's the little bit of a health update. Also, little news that I definitely want to show you where the origin came from. I think this is a big deal, especially the fact that John Cena did not want to be a part of Saudi Arabia. I mean, if he appeared before, was it like 2018? So John Cena will be part of Crown Jewel, which I think is November 4th this year. I think it's November 4th. It's right around that time. It's first week in November. And for everyone out there that's reporting it, I'm going to show you a little video as far as where they got it from. And I'm going to take it one step further because a lot of people are wondering if John Cena will actually have a match. If you saw Friday SmackDown, we're leading to AJ and John Cena, possibly versus Solo Sikoa and Jimmy Uso. I know a lot of you out there would love to see Cena versus Solo. Me, I would love it as well. I don't know if that's going to happen. I mean, John Cena could still work, but John Cena, it feels like he is better suited to be a compliment for someone who's going to do more of the workload. But as of right now, and you're hearing it here, John Cena, guest host, the host of WWE Crown Jewel. No guarantee that he will actually have a match, but it appears John Cena will be there. And as of right now, I was told John Cena, the front runner, to be the host of Crown Jewel. This is a small 20-second clip video from a 10-minute hype video that Saudi Arabia put out as far as upcoming events, not just WWE, but soccer, concerts, everything else. I edited all the other shit out. There's two parts that you got to pay attention to. Now, the first part, when you see it, I've slowed down the video speed so you could read the bottom text. But when you see the screenshots, you realize that the people that they're showing you on the screen is not necessarily going to be there. Case in point. All right, this, you see this. This is WWE. In fact, it's interesting. They showed some women with some bearing some skin. But as you see, this is a slowed down clip from the Saudi Arabia video. DC, here's Randy Orton. I don't think Randy Orton's going to be in Saudi Arabia, but hey, never say never. Undertaker, maybe he makes a special appearance. I don't know if the Undertaker is going to be there. But you see the others, and they show, you know, the little kid, and they got to show, you know, the woman happy because it's not always about the men in Saudi Arabia anymore. But I want to show you another one, and I will keep the speed normal, and I'll even have the audio. Why not? And it shows Roman Reigns and John Cena. If you look at the text, it kind of backs up what I was told about John Cena possibly being the host. Because if you look at the wording, it doesn't necessarily say that John Cena is going to wrestle. For those on audio only, I'll basically interpret what's being said right now. It's only a few seconds long. It's coming up right after the tennis. Right after the tennis. No worries. Here it comes. 3, 2, 1, go! There you go. WWE champions. This year will be different with WWE champions, and the season will host the biggest wrestling festival in the world, Crown Jewel, with the participation of John Cena. There you go. So that's where this is coming from. For everybody that's reporting it, we will wait and see if John Cena actually has a match or if he's going to be the host of Crown Jewel. But, you know, interesting because John Cena did not want to be a part of the Saudi Arabia stuff for many years. Then again, John Cena hasn't been around WWE that much in the last bunch of years. I mean, he's made periodic appearances, but the timing never really was in sync with Saudi Arabia. So there you go. Also, I don't want to spur a controversy. I don't want to stir it up, but I got to ask the question. You know how we are over here. We tell it like it is. All right. The PWI Top 500 came out. And I use the term in the synopsis, male wrestlers. I already got two nasty DMs saying, DT, it's not just men. There's women involved as well. Now, I have no problem women, you know, doing stuff that men does and vice versa and all that. I'm cool with it. Absolutely cool with it. But I got to share something with you. And, you know, we're not going to do a deep dive about it, but I got to ask the question. Because maybe some of you could fill me in on it and make me believe that it is justified. And I will show you what I'm talking about in a minute. But first, Seth Rollins on the 14th of September went on Twitter and posted this picture. And all it is a picture of the Shield's fists when they used to do that pose and they put all their fists together. It's just the fists. You know, we don't need a wrestling news site, the identity of the hands in this picture. Seth Rollins just posted that. Very innocent. People were wondering why Seth Rollins posted that. Well, what we found out is that Seth Rollins was notified on the 14th of September that he has once again regained the number one position in the PWI top 500. I think Seth Rollins was number one in 2019. Seth Rollins is once again number one. Roman Reigns dethroned and is no longer in the number one position. And John Moxley, number three. So you have Rollins, you got the Shield in the top three of the PWI 500. Now listen, I have said in the past that the PWI top 500 isn't what it used to be. Very interesting that AEW doesn't have anywhere near the footprint that it had last year. But, you know, there's something about this list that I really have to ask you guys, all right? Now, I'm not going to go through the whole top 500. Again, this list is not as strong as it used to be, but everybody and their mother still talks about it. Everybody has conversations about it. Before we get into some of the spots, it is embarrassing. When you have like Finn Balor, like almost like near 100, I don't know what the fuck you're smoking. When we go through the list, you'll see some of the spots are just absolutely hilariously stupid. But I got to ask about one person. I'm not trying to cause controversy. I just want someone to educate me a little bit more because I've done a little research and I'm still a little confused by this. The big story coming out of this PWI top 500 is not just the fact that the Shield own the top three spots and Seth Rollins is back to number one, but Masha Slamovic is ranked number 15. Masha Slamovic, they are saying, is the highest ranked woman in the history of the PWI top 500. So, you know, I looked through the list again and I realized quickly, you know, that this is not male and female together because, you know, you say, okay, where's Rhea Ripley? Where's this person? Where's this person? And in looking at this a little bit further, the reason why Masha Slamovic is on this list is because she has had matches involving men. Okay. I went, did some Google searching, did some research, and look at her matches over the last year. And I can't count the number of matches on two hands. Like, I found one where she teamed up, I think, with Bully Ray. She wrestled someone on an indie show. How many matches has Masha Slamovic, you know, I get it, Slamovic, you know. But my question is, how many matches has Masha had against men? Because you ranking Masha at number 15, higher than Bryan Danielson, than Will Ospreay, than Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Kenny Omega, Drew McIntyre, Hangman Page. She's ranked higher than all of them. I know she is fucking good. But if she had just a handful of matches against men, I'll tell you why she does not belong on this list. And please, before anybody says, oh, what a sexist remark. No, I'm going to say something right now that'll shut everybody the fuck up. If Masha fights men, therefore has her on this list, then how come the men who fought Masha are not on the women's list? I mean, I'm just pointing that out. If she's that fucking good, put her number one in the women's PWI top 500. She's not known to just wrestle men. You know, this is not like the reverse Andy Kaufman where all he fought was women. So when I see that and I see how much Bryan Danielson has done over the past year and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn main eventing WrestleMania, you know, it's like, come on. It's really hard to take this list that seriously. But if she repeatedly fought certain men, why aren't that men on the women's list? Why? Well, I'm just asking the question. So anyway, like I said, we're not going to go through the whole list. But I'll give you the top list, and then we'll just randomly show you some numbers as far as how ridiculously bad this list gets. The early part of it is not that bad. There's some names that are a little bit of a joke, with all due respect. Seth Rollins, number one. Roman Reigns, number two. John Moxley, number three. Gunther, number four. El Hijo del Vikingo, number five. I know he's un-fucking-believable, but there's a reason why Rey Mysterio Jr. in 1995, when the Americas finally got a chance to see him full-blown, first in ECW and then WCW, and by the way, this week in history is the anniversary of Rey's debut in ECW, just because he's a sensational star, the masses still do not follow him. And when you look at the guidelines, sorry, there's a lot of those guidelines that he doesn't fit. So they have him number five. MJF number six, Okada number seven, Orange Cassidy number eight. So you could have a championship, put him on TV every week more than anybody else, has great matches. You're telling me that Orange Cassidy is better than Bryan Danielson in the last 12 months? The fuck out of here. Josh Alexander, number nine. Cody Rhodes, number 10. Sonata, number 11. Claudio Castagnoli, number 12. Carmelo Hayes, number 13. As much as I am a huge fan of Carmelo Hayes, anybody that tunes into my Wednesday shows for 2 years, I've been singing the praise of Carmelo Hayes. There is no fucking way, even though he is NXT heavyweight champion, is Carmelo Hayes that high on that list. That is a goddamn joke. Samoa Joe, 14. Masa Samovich, number 15. Bryan Danielson, number 16. Will Ospreay, 17. Alexander Hammerstone, 18. Bobby Lashley, 19. Does it feel like Bobby Lashley has had an underwhelming past 12 months? How is Bobby Lashley that high on the list? And listen, some of these are people that I'm big fans of. I'll even say it. Number 20, Trey Miguel. 21, Kevin Owens. 22, Sami Zayn. 23, Jake Lee. 24, Chris Jericho. 25, Kenny Omega. 26, Drew McIntyre. 27, Hiromu Takahashi. 28, Hangman Page. Hangman Page has done gots in the last 12 months. Honestly, come on. I mean, yeah, maybe late last year, him and Bryan Danielson. Yeah, you know, all right, maybe. But wait, when we start getting into more people, you realize maybe he's still a little too high on this list. 29, Kaito Kiyomiya, which I know about 99% of you out there have never heard of before. Gran Guerrero, number 30. Matt Cardona, 31. Jay White, 32. Sean Skywalker, 33. Alex Kane, 34. Now we'll skip a bunch and just get into some notable names. Bron Breakker, 37. Bron Breakker, ranked higher than Solo Sikoa, who is ranked number 38. Kenta is ranked number 40. Ricky Starks, number 43. Austin Theory, 45. Wardlow, who honestly, in my opinion, it's not his fault, has had a shit past 12 months, is ranked 47. Darby Allin, 49. Edge, part-time Edge, 50. Sammy Guevara, 51. Rey Mysterio, 53. Banger after banger after banger gets you to 54 spot. I kid you not. Nick Aldis, 57. Tyrus, 58. Finn Balor, 61. Finn Balor, 61. Wheeler Yuta, 63. Daniel Garcia, 69. Damian Priest, 71. The more I see this list, the more I fucking want to laugh. Pentagon Jr., number 72. Eddie Kingston, 77. Let's see. Frankie Kazarian, 91. Dominic Mysterio, 94. AJ Styles, 99 with love balloons. Jay Lethal, 101. Hook, 103. Mustafa Ali, 108. Chris Sabin, 110. Swerve Strickland, 112. Shinsuke Nakamura, 113. Man, this list is horrible. The more I look at it, Konosuke Takeshita, 126. LA Knight, 130. Minoru Suzuki, 133. Ace Austin, 134. Bandito, 136. Santos Escobar, 140. The Miz, 141. Buddy Matthews, 143. Where is Malachi Black? I just noticed it. Where the fuck is Malachi Black on this list? I JD McDonough, 172. Bully Ray, 171. Omos, 174. JD McDonough, 172. I think I said that. Ilya Dragunov, 151. Bronson Reed, where is he? Anyway, I got to do a search just for Malachi Black. I got to just look up Malachi Black just to find him on this list. Malachi Black. Malachi Black is ranked, let's see, he's not on this list? Malachi Black is not on this list? Am I missing something here? I just typed in the words black. I just typed black. We got Black Taurus, and we got Kevin Blackwood. You know what? Maybe I have to start from number one. Let me try it now. Let's see what happens. No, that's it. All right. Done with this list. I just wanted to give you an overview. I personally think Seth Rollins has earned the number one spot. Absolutely. Roman Reigns, you know, obviously the importance of his reign, no pun intended, obviously warrants to be on that high of a list. And Moxley, whether you like him or not, Moxley has been the consistent part of AEW. But, you know, when you start looking, like I said, even Damian Priest and Finn Balor, I mean, what they have done over the past 12 months, yeah, this list gets bad really quickly. All right. So that is your PWI Top 500. We should get the women's list soon. And when we do, we'll definitely talk about it. So, by the way, I didn't even see CM Punk on this list. I mean, he really has not had that many matches, so I wouldn't have him really much on there either. But for those that are interested, CM Punk, you know, actually was spotted this weekend. And he kind of broke his silence a little bit. Some shots on the backstage fight. Some play on words. This is a screenshot of CM Punk this weekend. He did commentary with John Morgan for Cage Fury Fighting, MMA. And when John Morgan announced him, he said, "Look who I ran into backstage." Get it? Backstage. And then he says that CM Punk was back on commentary with cause. You know, if you think about what Tony Khan said as far as the firing. Then CM Punk gave us an interesting comment. He said that he's back. He's got some time on his hands for the next 2 months. So what is happening in about 2 months? Survivor Series, which happens to be in Chicago. I got to be honest with you. If you saw the thumbnail for this show, I put a little play on the Collision show, Collision Course. I truly believe CM Punk will be back in the WWE. The fact that it's owned by TKO now, the fact that the personal animosity, you know, doesn't weigh in as much because this is now TKO Group Holdings. And yes, Vince is the chair and all this, but still, this is not, you know, even your brother's, you know, your cousin's WWE. I brought this up last week. CM Punk has always been an asshole. If you remember the show that I happened to be on with him, the Chris Candido Memorial Show episode, the second annual one, there is a YouTube video of that match. I own some of the rights of that match because I went partners with Frank Goodman that night for that show, money-wise. And the match that's on YouTube is censored by like 7 minutes were chopped off. And a lot of what's chopped off is CM Punk being an absolute asshole towards fans, towards women, saying some awful things. And we played it on one of my shows, I think the sit-down episode like a year and a half ago. We played it in its entirety. My point is, CM Punk for 20-plus years has been one of the top wrestlers and one of the great mic pieces. CM Punk's also been one of the biggest assholes, yet TNA hired him, yet WWE hired him, yet MMA hired him, yet AEW hired him. He still gets work everywhere, knowing the baggage that comes with it. He had a backstage altercation with Jack Perry, and honestly, a lot of people feel, even though CM Punk, totally unprofessional, in the position that he was in, should have taken the high road because of the power that he was trying to build and the importance of Collision and Warner Media and their investment in AEW, something that I will keep hammering on these shows until it becomes a regular discussion on other people's shows who still don't bring it up. Warner Media is financially invested in AEW. So CM Punk should have taken the high road, but there's a lot of people that think that Jungle Boy deserved it. And CM Punk, look, in the history of pro wrestling, people have had fights. Brock Lesnar went at it, with Chris Jericho backstage? Wasn't there something there, if I remember, with Randy Orton, like, bleeding heavily or something, and they got into it? Wrestlers have had fights. And WWE has still used them, and some of those wrestlers still wrestle there today. CM Punk, you know, under the WWE machine, the TKO machine, the legal aspect of it, I think he would be on pins and needles. And I don't know, not the whole locker room would accept him. But with all due respect, I think back to the mid-2000s, when we were doing the Minority Report and the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show and even the Blackheart Sports Entertainment Hotline, we used to talk about certain wrestlers in the back in the WWE that did not like CM Punk. When CM Punk made his ECW debut, you know, for the WWE, ECW's version, you know, WWE's version of ECW, a lot of people were like, you know, this guy thinks his shit don't stink. You know, he's always had that. So I think WWE will still do business with him. I also think that Seth Rollins, for the magnitude of the match and the reality of it, he worked with Matt Riddle. He actually did some stuff with Matt Riddle. I mean, you don't think he won't do something with CM Punk? And I personally think CM Punk might be on his best behavior in the WWE. Not to give a fuck you to Tony Khan, but to give a fuck you to the EVPs. Give a fuck you to those Young Bucks and Hangman Page and all their friends and all of the coddled people behind the scenes in AEW, the Jack Perrys and everybody else. You know, you don't get that vibe from Cody Rhodes. You don't get that vibe. Does anybody get that vibe that Cody Rhodes is trying to show up AEW? No. When he's asked about AEW, he always shows nothing but love and respect. I don't get that vibe from CM Punk. And if CM Punk shows up in WWE and they put him on the grandest stage of them all and he works with Seth Rollins and he works fine, you know, I think a lot of people in AEW would be like, where the fuck was this CM Punk? Like, how come we didn't have this CM Punk? So, yeah, I do believe CM Punk will appear in the WWE. Survivor Series, though, I think it's a little too predictable. And you know who comes to mind immediately? Mercedes Moné. I don't remember what event it was. Was it Survivor Series also? Do you remember last year she posted a video and she said about something happening in 2 months and she was like, I can't fucking wait to share with everyone. And everybody thought it was in sync with a WWE event coming up, and it had nothing to do with WWE. So I kind of think about that. I think it's a little too predictable. But the fact that Survivor Series is in Chicago, I mean, if you're going to do anything, I mean, my God, I still have them all over my goddamn desk with these freaking ice cream wrappers. I mean, they're everywhere on my desk. They're all scattered. You know, I still have about 50 of those Topps cards that they came out with. They made it so, you know, big of an iconic memory in AEW when CM Punk made his debut that night on Rampage. If he returned to WWE, it would be insane. But then what do you do between Survivor Series and WrestleMania? That's why I kind of think, no, I don't think CM Punk for Survivor Series. But I could see something happening closer to WrestleMania. And I think that would be pretty wild. And you know what's the greatest part about it? I mean, I couldn't mess with the thumbnail for the show. But if you think about it, based on the PWI Top 500, as ridiculous as part of that list is, Seth Rollins right now is the best in the world. So if Seth Rollins, I mean, I know WWE does not name drop PWI on TV. But if Seth Rollins started doing that, calling himself the best in the world and name-dropping PWI, you know, that obviously could turn into instant storyline. But I don't see them doing that on TV. So we shall see. All right. Ratings for this week are very interesting. And before we recap Raw, I want to get into ratings now because I saw a question come in about Dwayne Johnson. I think it would be a good segue from that. But something also about The Rock appearing on SmackDown. It popped a big rating. But how big of a rating did it score compared to other SmackDowns of this year? I did a little research and it's going to surprise you a little bit. Now, yes, it was unadvertised, and a lot of people did not realize that The Rock was on until it was obviously too late in the show. You know, there was no big peaks after The Rock left. It actually dipped, and then it kind of improved a little bit, and it kept the pace. What's interesting, for all you LA Knight fans out there, let this sink in. LA Knight versus The Miz scored a little bit of a better rating than John Cena on the Grayson Waller effect and the confrontation that happened afterwards. They weren't that far apart. They were only, I think, 45 minutes apart from each other. So let's break it down. Raw last Monday for September 11th did a near record low, 1,353,000. Way down from the week prior, 1,704,000. Yes, football has an influence on it, but football's always had an influence on Raw. We'll see what happens with the ratings this week. The high point of last week's Raw was the Imperium, Alpha Academy, and Ciampa confrontation, along with the backstage confrontation with Drew McIntyre and Xavier Woods that did 1,499,000. The low point of last week's Raw was the Becky Lynch-Tiffany Stratton contract signing and the very beginning of Raquel Rodriguez versus Rhea Ripley, which did 1,199,000. Oof. By the way, how many of you got a kick out of Raw tonight when they said that Nia Jax injured Rhea Ripley and Raquel Rodriguez? I thought that was fucking hilarious. And she injured four more women tonight. It'd be funny if they're all on the shelf. That would be pretty freaking funny. Playing off on that Nia Jax is not safe to work with. I thought that was funny today. All right, NXT, big score last week. 850,000 up from the week prior, 674. The high point of last week was Becky Lynch versus Tiffany Stratton, which did 994,000 viewers. They almost outdrew Rhea versus Raquel main event Raw. The low point of last week's NXT was Dana Brooke versus Lyra Valkyria, and that horrible segment with Eddie Thorpe, Dijak, a tree, and a belt. We were doing a watch party, and I'm like, what the fuck am I looking at? Dijak is whipping a tree. It's supposed to be a religious tree. I mean, I would have peed on it. I mean, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but it was just came off so dumb on TV, man. No, and it was the lowest part. But it did 800,000 viewers. Still, much higher than you'd expect. This will surprise you. AEW Dynamite last week, 888,000 viewers, only up 1,000 from the week prior, which was 887. The high point of last week's Dynamite was Hangman Page versus Brian Cage. Did 935,000 viewers. Props to them, man. As much as I, you know, criticize Hangman Page for different reasons, man, they got the high. There was no MJF involvement in that, and they scored 935. The low point, listen, man, we have nothing against him personally, but it is mind-boggling that they keep fucking doing this. For, again, it's a streak. Nick Wayne and Darby Allin versus 2.0, and then the post-match confrontation with Christian Cage and Luchasaurus, that was the low point, which did 801,000 viewers. Every time Nick Wayne is on Collision or Dynamite, whatever he's on, he is the lowest part of the show. The week before, they main evented him for some goddamn reason. I know why. He's Darby Allin's good friend, and Tony Khan is in love with him. Why are they shoving this kid on TV like that? He keeps getting the love. It makes you think that at the end of the day, and this is not trying to, you know, criticize Tony Khan, does he give a shit about the ratings? I mean, does he only care about the overall number? I mean, does he care that he loses 150,000 people when he throws Nick Wayne in a very high-profile position? Like, if you shift a couple of things around, I think the ratings would be much higher. If you shifted him into a different, put him on Fridays, put him on Rampage, strictly Rampage. But that's what they do. This is sad. Yesterday, I talked about it. Some of you didn't believe me, and today it was official. You know, I don't lie to you guys when I give you stuff. Impact Wrestling, 1,000th episode, did 107,000 viewers, down from the week prior's 111. And on top of it, I don't talk about demos unless it's newsworthy. The lowest score that you could score is 0.00. That's the lowest you could score. Nobody watches 0.00. Impact Wrestling for 1,000, their demo for 18 to 49 was 0.01. That is embarrassing. I can't explain it. I can't fucking explain it. I thought if there was a boost, what I was hoping is that a whole bunch of 50 and 60-year-olds tuned into him. I want to see 150,000 viewers and find out that a whole bunch of 50 and 60-year-olds tune in. And for people that think that that's kind of like dumb, remember last week when we talked about Becky Lynch on Wednesday Night Dynamite. Becky Lynch and Tiffany Stratton, their main event match on NXT last week, the rating went up 160,000 viewers for their match. The 18 to 49 demo only went up 20,000. So 140,000 people that tuned in for that main event were either under 18 with a Nielsen box, which I don't think is the case, or they were over 49. So it does happen. How the fuck do you push 1,000 like that and you lose viewers? I'm baffled by it. New Japan did 75,000 viewers, up from the week prior, 66,000. Rampage this past Friday, no love for Jade. No love for Jade Cargill. The reports came out 2 days earlier. This was Jade Cargill's final match in AEW. You think fans decided, you know what, I want to see her last match. I heard she put on a good match with Chris Statlander. Let's see what happens. Let's see if they show the hug. Did not draw. Rampage Friday did 335,000 viewers, down from the week prior is 385. The high point from Friday was the Hardys and the Lucha Brothers versus Jeff Jarrett, Jay Lethal, The Butcher and the Blade, which did 364,000 viewers. The low point was Aussie Open versus Lord Crew and Damian Chambers, which did 334. And for those that are curious, Chris Statlander and Jade Cargill did 336,000. They're almost at the bottom. The average, the overall was 335. They did 336. So they did the average. But it didn't boost the number at all. So to wrap up the ratings, we get to SmackDown. SmackDown Friday did 2,569,000. That is way up from the previous week of 2,094,000. Now, remember, 2,569, 2,569. I looked at SmackDowns from this year to see what came close or what scored better. And I found three SmackDowns that had almost the identical rating. So if you thought that The Rock, you know, was, I mean, again, it was unannounced, so you got to weigh that in, obviously. But if you think that this rating on Friday was an, listen, 103 million views on YouTube, yeah, that's a big deal. That's a lot of ad money that came in for them. But as far as SmackDown goes, Roman Reigns still outdrew The Rock. It did 2,569,000 on Friday. July 7th, SmackDown did 2,561,000. Almost the same. What was that SmackDown? The Tribal Court, the trial of Roman Reigns. On June 2nd, SmackDown did 2,563,000. Almost identical to Friday. What was that SmackDown? Roman Reigns 1,000-day celebration. And then we have January 27th, 2,544,000. What did that SmackDown have? It was the go-home show for the Royal Rumble, the day before the Royal Rumble, and the main event that night was Kevin Owens versus Solo Sikoa. So just to put it in perspective, Friday's rating, in sync with some Roman Reigns heavily themed episodes, but not something that was, it almost makes, I mean, it was an unbelievable surprise. It was a cool, awesome surprise. But it also makes you wonder if they fucking announced it beforehand, or if they, what I personally think they should have done, guys, is a day before, if they knew that The Rock and Pat McAfee were going to be there, the day before, have somebody credible online. And I know Fightful said early in the day on Friday that somebody told them that they might be there. Still, you know, not everybody is a Fightful fan, and you too many reporters, I'm not saying Fightful gets it wrong, but too many reporters get shit wrong. they hunch. And I think there should have been more of a clear cut. You know, I was told The Rock and Pat McAfee are going to be on SmackDown. Not maybe, not possibly, not probably. They are. Let that, you don't have to have WWE report it. You don't have to have anybody officially announce it. But you spread that across the net. Everybody and their mother. Holy shit, did you hear? They're saying The Rock and Pat McAfee is going to be on. WWE hasn't said anything, but these people are standing. I think they would have went over 3 mil. I think they would have easily went over 3 mil. So, what was the high point and the low point from SmackDown? Well, the high point from SmackDown was The Rock, Austin Theory, and Pat McAfee. It did 2,805,000 viewers. The low point of SmackDown, sorry guys, we have to mention his name once again. He is heavily involved in the lowest parts of SmackDown, whether people like it or not. Rey Mysterio with the promo exchange with Bobby Lashley, and then the Street Profits versus the LWO and what transpired afterwards. That did 2,422,000. And as I said earlier, just because I did the research and I figured you'd get a kick out of it for all you LA Knight hardcore fans out there, and I'm a fan also, but I think you'll appreciate this. Number one, when The Miz and LA Knight had their match, SmackDown's rating jumped 160,000 viewers. As soon as LA Knight versus The Miz ended, they lost almost all of those 160,000 viewers. Went up, as soon as the match ended, went back down. And The Miz and LA Knight did 2,588,000 viewers, 2,000 viewers higher than John Cena and the Grayson Waller effect. Pretty interesting when you think about that, because you think John Cena, I mean, look, The Rock iconic, but John Cena, you know, you think that it would have generated a little bit more interest. And there were other people, not named The Rock, Pat McAfee, that drew higher ratings than Cena and Grayson Waller. It's very interesting. I figured I'd share it with you. I figured you got a kick out of it. I'm trying to avoid talking about something sad, but I definitely have to mention it. And there is a little news involved with it as well, that any of you out there that are into wrestling figures, I don't know if you're aware of this as of yet. I got an email from the Mattel because, you know, I get, you know, stuff to promote figures and stuff. WWE Elite Collections Greatest Hits number 3 and the WWE Ultimate Edition number 20, Wave 20. They were supposed to come out with Bray Wyatt figures, and they have been canceled. Mattel wants to give the family time to grieve. And in the future, they will be coming out with special editions to pay tribute to Bray Wyatt. So for any of you out there that were looking forward to the upcoming Bray Wyatt releases by Mattel, they are not happening. They are canceled. So I just wanted to let you know. JoJo broke her silence. And I wanted to read to you what she said about the passing of Bray Wyatt. Very beautiful. It's not long, but I think a lot of you would appreciate it. JoJo writes, and I quote, "I've written and rewritten this post so many times because there's no amount of words in this world to describe Wyndham and what he means to me. But I've also been avoiding it because in some weird way, it makes it all of this too real. I miss the love of my life so much it hurts. He was everything I ever wanted and everything I never knew I needed. And I let him know that every day. I am so grateful that he allowed me to love him fiercely. But I am so blessed he loved me fiercely in return. He was and always will be the best person I know, my best friend, and my soulmate. Wyndham truly gave me a love that will last a lifetime. And oh, baby, I thank him for that. He was the kindest, funniest, most caring man in the world. He made me feel beyond special every single day. He made everyone feel special, which was one of the million things that I loved about him. Our bond was magical, something only the two of us understood, and that beautiful bond brought two perfect babies into the world. That's another thing. He was the best daddy to Nash, Hyrie, Caden, and Kendall. Family was everything to him. Wyndham knew me better than I knew myself, and he always knew how to calm my storm as I did for him. He was the only person in the world I could be unapologetically myself around, and not only did he accept it, he loved it. I cry because I wish we had more time, baby, but I smile because I was so blessed to be loved by you in the time that we did have. I will always love you, Wyndham. I will always show our kids how incredible their daddy is. I will always make sure they know how much you love them. And I will always make you proud, just like you make me proud. You made me proud. I love you forever, baby, until we meet again. So I just wanted to share that with everyone. Pretty sad, man. Pretty sad. You know, if I could brighten the mood a little bit, she talked about bringing two special kids in the world. Someone else also brought two special kids in the world last week. If any of you that remember Kelly Kelly, Barbie Blank, her and her husband gave birth to twins. That is one picture that came out. Yes, they all have to go to People Magazine, but hey, they're celebrities. They've earned it. Brooklyn Marie Koba, 6 pounds, 11 ounces, and Jackson Matthew Koba, 6 pounds, 5 ounces. So, congrats. Congrats. Figured I'd mention it. I heard Alexa Bliss, they have revealed the name of their child. I don't think she's given birth yet, right? Hendrix Rouge. And Hendrix is spelled just like Jimi Hendrix, and Rouge is spelled just like the color, R-O-U-G-E. And if you want to get morbid a little bit, this week in history, this is going to be covered. Yeah. Don't even ask. I originally was going to share the audio. This week in wrestling history. Kane, Gene Snitsky, Lita, it wasn't my fault. This week in history. You know what? Before we focus on Raw, I'll give you a little preview of this week in history. I think you'll get a kick out of it. There you could see Pile Driver, the album came out. The Mega Powers formed. A very infamous match with Ravishing Rick Rude and Ric Flair, the Nature Boy Ric Flair. We got this really stupid, dumb, asinine segment with Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. If you have no idea what that screenshot is about, you have to tune in and hear the audio. The infamous match with Bill Alfonso and Beulah McGillicuddy. And what about Steve Austin? Steve Austin making his ECW debut. I'm sure a lot of you have heard this a trillion times over, but why not share it one more time?
Anywhere, not even in ECW. because there's no way this lame ass is going to get the job done anywhere.
This ain't where.
All right, all right. I have the uncensored somewhere. I don't know. You know what was interesting? I'm not going to play it now, but when we were talking over the weekend that we didn't want UFC to do an invasion of WWE, and I brought up the night that ECW showed up at Mind Games, 1996, you know, it just so happens that this week in history is the anniversary of that, and that clip is actually on this week's episode. Here's two more previews. As I said earlier, Rey Mysterio Jr. and Psicosis made their ECW debuts. Cactus Jack, remember the night, Madison Square Garden, Three Faces of Foley? Cactus Jack made his debut, defeated Triple H. One of my favorite Raw matches of all time. Steve Austin stuns Vince McMahon for the very first time. Remember that night? I appreciate the fact that WWE cares. Hell, I appreciate the fact that I'm going to kick your ass, whatever he said. Bobby Lashley made his WWE debut this week. I think he beat Simon Dean. Lita Kane, yeah, we will not say what that was all about. Hacksaw Jim Duggan turning heel. Goldberg making his WCW debut. This week in history is the anniversary of the match with Seth Rollins and Sting. And it is 7 years ago officially now. September 19th, 7 years ago today, Chris Jericho debuted The List of Jericho. And you know what? I have some other audio clips here, but I'm going to share one now before we talk about Raw. For me, it was always a pipe bomb that Jim Ross did, good old JR, a pipe bomb that he cut in WWE. And this was 1996. So at that time, if you remember, this was right at the early Attitude. I don't even know if Attitude technically started yet. But if for those that are curious, how many of you remember? I mean, we know that we had the fake Diesel and the fake Razor Ramon in the WWE at the time because Kevin Nash, Scott Hall were in WCW. I think a lot of people forget that Jim Ross is the one that brought the fake Diesel and the fake Razor Ramon into the WWE. Does anybody remember the promo that JR cut? He turned heel. Jim Ross turned heel.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, before I was so rudely interrupted with a commercial break, we're going to conduct this interview right now. And in just a couple of moments, I want to bring Big Daddy Cool Diesel and Razor Ramon right out here. But before I do, I'd like to just beg your indulgence for just a minute or so and tell you something that I've got on my mind. There's something I've been waiting to say for a long, long time. And when I'm through telling you, many of you are going to question my loyalty to the World Wrestling Federation. So let's clear that up right now.
What's he talking about? I have no idea.
I have no loyalty to the World Wrestling Federation. I've only got loyalty to good old JR. Let me tell you why. In 1993, I left a great job in Atlanta, Georgia. And I left the Atlanta Falcons of the National Football League to go to the recognized leader of sports entertainment, the WWF. And I came here to be the primary play-by-play man in the WWF. I don't think anybody here is going to disagree that I'm the best play-by-play man in the whole damn business.
What's he doing? I really don't know.
I show up for work the first day at WrestleMania 9 in Las Vegas, Nevada, and they give me a sheet to wear. They said, oh, it's going to be a toga. You'll look good in a toga, JR. I lead the National Football League for a toga. It's crap. And then, ladies and gentlemen, I go to the first King of the Ring in Dayton, Ohio. And I guarantee you, you listen to that broadcast. I carried the broadcast from ringside. And then did you ever wonder Why isn't JR doing play-by-play anymore? Let me tell you why. Because the egotistical owner of the World Wrestling Federation, and you know what I'm talking about Vince McMahon, couldn't stand the competition.
Why is he doing this? This is rather unfortunate.
So JR disappeared. And then on Super Bowl Sunday in 1994, I woke up with an affliction called Bell's palsy. And my entire left side of my face looked like I had a stroke. You think I like that? You think I like that my left eye doesn't open all the way because I got sick? Let me tell you how warm-hearted Mr. McMahon is. Mr. McMahon called me into his office on February the 11th, 1994, and he fired my ass. So I get back in my car, and I'm driving to my home in that overpriced hellhole, Connecticut, and I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to tell my wife and my two little girls that their daddy had just got fired. On the dollar to come back and work in the front office. Do you think that all these guys leaving the WWF was an accident? Hell no, it's not.
You hear him talking about Vince McMahon being indicted and everything else. You know, everybody talks about CM Punk's pipe bomb. I always remember Jim Ross's pipe bomb that nobody ever really talks about, ever. 1996. And you know what? I'm going to share with you one more. It's only a minute and a half long. Something as to why I always love doing audio. I love doing video too, but what I love about audio is if you can't see what's going on, you have to, if you've never seen it before, you have to envision what is going on. And sometimes when you're watching something, your eyes and your brain is the attention is to what you are seeing. And it takes a little bit of the distraction off of what you're hearing. When you have audio only, all of your focus has to be with your ears. So when you hear things, you're forced to pay attention that much more. And believe me when I tell you, I know not everybody out there likes this guy. And, you know, outside of wrestling, I understand why people have said it. But for me, going back in the day, you know, when you talk about the greatest debuts in WWE history, and believe me, if you look at that list that WWE put out last year, some wrestlers who made their debuts were already in the company under different gimmicks. To me, this is one of the best debuts that WWE has ever had, who wasn't on the list. Did not make the list. And I want you to just hear the crowd erupt when they hear this person show up. Just, and this is, I will tell you, this year is 2000. And the match that you're hearing a little clip of is Taz versus Jerry the King Lawler. It's a strap match. So when you hear who shows up, it's not a big name, you know, decent name. But listen to this crowd erupt, and then you realize, for the life of me, I don't understand why it didn't even make the list. Just check this out, and then we'll move to Raw. Hold on. Got to set this up. Oh, here we go. Okay, good. I got it. Here we go. By the way, just listen how energetic this crowd is. I miss this shit. I mean, Friday was fun with The Rock for that 2 minutes. But, you know, when you're watching an event and you hear this energy all throughout the night, it's something totally different.
Consecutive
submission. That's the second one. And Lawler going for three. Lawler's going to touch the one more turnbuckle, and it's over. And Taz now trying to put the brakes on Lawler. And now Lawler. What's he going to try to do here? Lawler got Taz. Up on his back, took it.
Could happen now.
And Lawler near that corner. And wait a minute. For God's sakes. That's Raven. What is Raven doing here? The referee is down. And Raven with a DDT. Raven with a DDT on the king. Damn it. Where the hell did he come from?
All right, that's enough. You know what? I am going to share one more, and this is only a minute. But and the reason why I'm going to share it is because I know a lot of you never saw Mind Games from 1996. When you think about what we talked about a couple of days ago with UFC, if they ever attempted to do an invasion dumb stunt, you know, stunt with WWE, think back. ECW had their first pay-per-view in 1997. ECW made a little agreement with Vince that they would be able to appear on WWE TV to promote Barely Legal. So ECW showed up at the Hammerstein Ballroom in, I think, February or March of 1997, and that's technically the ECW invasion. But this is from 1996, the year before. And this was officially the first introduction of ECW showing up on WWE television. This is only a minute and a half long, but if you want to see how they handled it in 1996, you'll get a kick out of it.
Just a moment. There's a local wrestling group here in Philadelphia, and obviously trying to make a name for themselves here. At the expense of the World Wrestling Federation. And we will not shoot this ugly incident that is occurring.
This man is a gentleman, and he's honest, and he's trustworthy as the day is long.
Well, he pulled one over on Jim Cornette, that's for sure.
Let me tell you something right now. You better watch what you say. I'll sue you for defamation, slander, you name it. I'll get you. You better watch what you say to me.
Go ahead.
What I'm saying to you. Sue their pants off.
Well, the fact is...
No, don't do that.
The document that Mr. Mason had Cornette sign was indeed the contract. Now, Mason is the manager...
Yeah.
So that was the year before. And trust me, as a hardcore, lifelong ECW fan, that was pretty epic to see on TV. And the way Vince handled it was pretty funny when you look back on it. So, all right, I know we did things a little bit out of order today, but, you know, there's 1,000 Raw reviews online, and we'll talk a little bit about Raw. I have a few things to say, absolutely. Once again, for those that are interested, the watch party tomorrow, it is playback.tv/Don Tony Show. If you haven't checked it out already, definitely check out Saturday's episode of the Don Tony Show. One of my top 10 episodes in the last 5 years. I mean, it was that good. For everybody that is wondering when the next Don Tony and Kevin Castle show will be happening, well, we have figured it out. September 26th. Mark it on your calendar. It'll be live on Patreon Tuesday the 26th at 10 p.m. and it'll be online for everybody on Wednesday morning. So you don't have to sign up on Patreon. It's not a money grab, just letting everybody know. So there's a couple of your quick plugs. Now, couple of things that we got to discuss as far as Raw tonight. First thing first is that, and if you heard my show yesterday, we knew Becky Lynch was bringing the NXT title to Raw. It was common sense. We found out today that Becky Lynch was going to defend the women's championship, the NXT women's championship, tonight on Raw. Now, early reports that were coming in that she was going to fight Tegan Knox. All right, and I know a lot of people reported early that she was going to take on Tegan Knox for the championship. What happened was, I don't know if this was a Vince move, but you always hear the negative Vince moves. It's either a Vince decision or a Triple H decision. Tegan Knox was originally supposed to be the opponent for Becky Lynch tonight. Natalya was supposed to be the opponent for Xia Li for main event. They decided to switch it. Instead of Natty taking on Xia Li for main event, they gave Tegan Knox that match. So Tegan Knox versus Xia Li will be our main event this week. Natalya got the title shot against Becky Lynch. Look, when Becky Lynch cut a promo tonight and said, I want to take this NXT Women's Championship to new heights. I want to feature the women, the stars of tomorrow, to give an opportunity, this and that. And then Natty comes out. It's like, you're like, oh, come on, man. But it made sense because what Becky Lynch said afterwards was, I know there's a whole roster of women in the back that have been waiting for an opportunity. And she issued the open challenge. NXT women don't normally attend Raw. Tiffany Stratton not showing up, storyline purposes, is kind of stupid. How many of you out there thought that during the match with Natty tonight, that Tiffany Stratton would do a run-in, cause the DQ, and then that kind of intensifies or keeps that feud lingering? I honestly thought Tiffany Stratton's been seen on WWE television week after week after week after week. If there was ever a time that Tiffany Stratton should have been on television, tonight. Tonight. But they didn't do that. Natty came out. What did she call Becky? A ginger witch? A ginger witch because, you know, like Becky Lynch, you know, pompous. But Natty had no problem trying to take the title from her. It was a great match. Don't get me wrong. It was a great match. But, you know, Becky Lynch. And listen, she's going to be on NXT tomorrow. I expect her to have a confrontation with Tiffany Stratton again. But prepare yourself. We talked about it for 2 weeks in a row. I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow. But it's going to happen in the next, I would say, 2 to 3 weeks at the most. NXT No Mercy, I doubt it. But if they wanted to do it for name value, they could. Piper Niven and Chelsea Green are going to show up at NXT. It is already being prepared. The question is, what week, And against who? Because if you really pay attention to NXT, and don't give me Dana Brooke and Kalani Jordan and so that, like tag teams, you might have Lola Vice and Electra Lopez. That might be the closest. You know, we have other tag teams, don't get me wrong, but as far as who would actually face Piper Niven and Chelsea Green, we don't know. But that's going to be happening sooner than you realize. So now we have two NXT championships being featured on WWE television. Because not only, obviously, the NXT Women's Championship, but don't forget Dominic Mysterio with the North American Championship. And Dominic Mysterio, I keep saying it. I know it's unpopular to some of you out there, but you got to acknowledge it. The guy is working his ass off. For today's standards, he's working his ass off. He's on Raw. He's on NXT. He's on SmackDown. He's on doing the house shows. He is working and just putting in the hours. And you got to commend that. Because, you know, I'm not saying that he would have taken easy street because he's a Mysterio, but he is putting in the time. Last week, when he just had that backstage promo with Carmelo Hayes to set up the match for tomorrow, I honestly thought it was pre-recorded. Because I was thinking, why do you need Dominic Mysterio to go all the way to Florida just to cut a backstage segment with Carmelo Hayes? You could have recorded that. He was actually there live. I mean, you know, to make the trip just for that, got to give him a little bit of credit. I mean, he's getting paid for this, obviously. But next week, we're going to have Dominic Mysterio defending the NXT North American Championship against Dragon Lee. That's happening on Raw. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't like this. And the reason why I don't like it is the same reason why Britt Baker got a title shot Saturday on Collision. Britt Baker has lost 7 matches in a row. She lost the week before a 4-way women's match to get a championship opportunity against Saraya. And you reward that by giving her a championship opportunity a couple of days later. My point is, Dragon Lee, you know, he's lost opportunities. Mustafa Ali won the opportunity to face Dominic Mysterio at NXT No Mercy. So the fact that they're doing this beforehand, I kind of find it stupid because NXT No Mercy is coming up. So I don't like the idea that, you know, he already got his shot, blew it, you blew it, and then Mustafa Ali's getting a shot and they do this anyway. So, all right. The big matches that they were advertising for tonight's Raw was Jey Uso and Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre, we already know, is going to ultimately be turning heel. A lot of people believe that Drew McIntyre will be next in line to challenge Seth Rollins for the World Heavyweight Championship. I got to be honest with you. Shinsuke Nakamura right now, I mean, I know I said this a week ago. I feel that he is at the best he has ever been since he's been on that main roster. Has he had better matches, better feuds? Sure. But as far as character, it is so, understand something, it is so freaking hard to get the fans to turn against Shinsuke Nakamura. Even when Shinsuke changed his music, because Shinsuke was a heel before. Why do you think they changed his music? Because they didn't want people serenading him. But now fans are just booing the shit out of him. You can't base it on social media reaction. You got to just listen to the crowds. Tonight, when he kept cheap-shotting Rollins, nailing him with the chair, hitting him with the power bomb, the sing bomb onto the table, that crowd was fucking livid with Shinsuke Nakamura. And I'm telling you, Shinsuke Nakamura right now, he is on such an A game. And a lot of people think that he's going to be champion. People think if you're going to pull the trigger and give him championship, now's the time. My gut feeling says no. My gut feeling thinks Drew McIntyre may end up being the one. Because Drew McIntyre turning heel, you know, to turn heel and not produce any type of results, you could defeat baby faces. He beat Xavier Woods. He beat Jey Uso tonight. Turning heel and beating baby faces is all good and everything, but there's got to be a bigger picture involved. And I think Drew McIntyre is going to be the one to get that championship. I would be happy if Nakamura gets it. But the storyline advancement with Nakamura and Rollins tonight, I thought was extremely solid. If there was only one thing that I would change, was at the very end of Raw tonight when he was in the back, limping, looking like he was 85 years old and, you know, just beaten and worn and emotionally, physically, and he's wearing those goofy goddamn glasses. I'm not going to do it because I'm not going to ruin any of my glasses here, but if he would have taken those glasses off and intentionally show everyone that, you know, he snapped and he breaks those glasses and just destroys everything, you know, and this is a different Seth Rollins that Nakamura has brought out, I would have been totally fine with it. But the fact that it was being worn because that's his outfit, I thought it was just stupid. Absolutely stupid. But it was great afterwards because he is so broken. He's giving in to Nakamura. Shinsuke, the ball is in your court. Any place, any time, you could choose the stipulation. So now everything is in the court of Shinsuke Nakamura. Now, in storyline purposes, if you're Shinsuke Nakamura and you choose the place, you choose the time, which will probably be Fastlane, what would the stipulation be? You got to think about Nakamura's career. You got to think about what would be a major disadvantage for Seth Rollins. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the stipulation is. But next week, they already hyped up the banner. Next week, Shinsuke Nakamura will answer Seth Rollins' challenge. And by the way, Shinsuke Nakamura, and I know we're going a little bit out of, you know, we're not going from beginning to end to the show. We're just talking about segments. But tonight we had Shinsuke Nakamura taking on Ricochet. That was another one of the advertised matches tonight. And they put on a clinic. You know, Ricochet, it's interesting because I personally think Ricochet would be a great NXT heavyweight champion. Not saying right at this very moment because I think it's Ilya's time to get it. But Ricochet, if they brought him back to NXT, gave him the championship and let him show up on Raw wearing that championship, I think that would help Ricochet so much. Ricochet is not being buried, but the problem with Ricochet is this. Because if you notice, after his match with Logan Paul, which he lost, you get these people online, oh, look what they're doing with Ricochet now. Now Ricochet's back to mid-card. And you hear that over and over again. The problem with Ricochet is almost timing all the time. Just when you think Ricochet has an opportunity to get a title opportunity, someone else ends up in that role. In this case right now, Shinsuke Nakamura. I'm not saying that Seth Rollins versus Ricochet feud would have been good. I don't know. But it seems like every time Ricochet, even more than a year and a half ago, before Gunther became the Intercontinental Champion, you think back to, listen, he had the United States Championship on SmackDown, if I remember correctly. It's not like he hasn't held titles, But it always seems like the timing is off. But they put on a banger tonight, and the finish was kind of crappy. They brawled outside the ring, and Shinsuke Nakamura, who was laid over, hanging over the barricade, grabs a chair. And they're outside the ring, and Shinsuke Nakamura is going to try to chair bash Ricochet. Ricochet knocks the chair out of Nakamura's hand. Ricochet picks up the chair. The referee's looking right at them. Ricochet decides he's going to wail Nakamura in the back with the chair. Immediate disqualification. So what happens afterwards? They brawl a little bit. Nakamura gets the upper hand. And he decides he's going to chair bash Ricochet. Hey, Ricochet's the one who used the chair first. He got DQ'd, so Nakamura returning a favor. He starts bashing Ricochet's knee against the ring post with the chair, and this brings out Seth Rollins. And Seth Rollins with Nakamura having a big pull apart. Somehow Ricochet gets the chair and chair bashes Rollins in the back. Rollins writhing in pain, just screaming in pain. And then they end up outside the ring. You got officials, referees, they're trying to break everything up. And then Nakamura gets to Rollins again, hits him with a sing bomb, lands him on the table, and Seth Rollins is selling agony. Adam Pearce is out there as well, selling agony. And the best part was somebody had a big head poster of Seth Rollins, and Shinsuke Nakamura got a grab of it and went up the rampway, and I thought that shit was funny, man. When he put the head in front of him and he's trolling everyone as he's going up the rampway, but the heat that Nakamura got tonight was tremendous, man. Was absolutely tremendous. So I'm really invested in that feud. We'll see where it goes. Next week, Nakamura making a stipulation. Somebody is saying Hell in a Cell. Hell in a Cell would be interesting. I don't know if that really, you know, I don't know if that would be a little bit too soon. You almost feel like this feud may actually go a little bit longer. But then again, with Drew McIntyre, I think Drew McIntyre is going to be that guy next in line. Especially if you think of the storyline that Drew McIntyre doesn't like how Raw is being run right now. Well, who is the head guy on Raw? If you really think about it, it's Seth Rollins and the way he parades and everything else. If they do Hell in a Cell, then that's it. The feud is done. Once you go Hell in a Cell, that's the end of it. I don't like the idea of an Iron Man match. I mean, I could see Seth Rollins, you know, I'm going to torment you. I'm going to beat you. I don't sound Japanese. It's got to be something that really puts Seth Rollins in a bad position. Seth Rollins has long matches. He had a long match with Nakamura at Payback. Wasn't in a very short match. It's not like he can't go. So it's got to be something that really puts Seth Rollins in a bad situation. So we'll see. We will know soon enough. So that was one of the matches that we got tonight. The opening match that we got tonight was Cody Rhodes against Dominic Mysterio. And it opened up almost the same as last week. Cody comes out. He's in gear. And he wants to talk about Jey Uso, because that's how he was going to open Raw last week, and Dominic interrupted him. Well, Dominic interrupted him again today. Dominic comes out there, and, you know, they start jawjacking each other. And then something that I was a little confused. I know why they said it, but it's kind of confusing. Cody Rhodes says to Dominic Mysterio that he's starting to get Urkel vibes. If you remember Family Matters, Urkel had a crush on Laura Winslow. So Cody Rhodes is insinuating that Dominic is Urkel and Rhea Ripley as Laura Winslow. And Cody Rhodes actually said, because I rewounded it, Cody Rhodes said, if you watched the show last week, Rhea has eyes for Jay. All I remember last week was Finn Balor telling Jey Uso that every member of Judgment Day liked him. And he said Rhea as well. And Jey Uso was like, for real? They wanted him in Judgment Day. The way Cody said it tonight, it was almost like Rhea showed like eyes for Jey Uso last week, which didn't happen at all. And then it got kind of stupid because Dominic Mysterio gets really offended, you know, mommy, and it's that. And I'm like, that didn't even happen last week. So before anything else, the Judgment Day come out, minus Rhea Ripley. And Cody Rhodes takes on Dominic Mysterio, gets the quick victory on Dominic Mysterio. Right after the match, the Judgment Day climb the apron, and they're surrounding Cody Rhodes. And then here comes Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn to make the save. Judgment Day retreat, and we think we're about to go to commercial. And Kevin Owens is in the ring still, and Kevin Owens gets the mic, and he says, Cody, who is up the rampway, Cody, he says, Cody, I want come back into the ring because I something I got to say. He's got a problem with Cody. Cody's like, all right, whatever. Cody goes back in the ring. And Kevin Owens is confronting Cody Rhodes for being the one to bring Jey Uso to Raw. And Cody, doing Dusty, you know, he brought Jey Uso to Raw because he wants the fans to be happy. And Cody says, you all like Jey Uso, right? And the fans are like, yeah. So they love Jey Uso. In fact, even when Jey Uso took on Drew McIntyre tonight, the crowd was more into Jey Uso than they were Drew. I mean, they were into Drew, you know, until the very end. But Cody, you know, the good guy for giving the fans Jey Uso. And then Cody says, look, Jey Uso deserves a second chance. And Cody said that the bloodline is down a member. What's wrong with that? So in storyline purposes, that makes sense. But then you start feeling that there's a split coming with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. And towards the end of Raw tonight, I thought to myself, in a bizarre world of Vince McMahon from 5 years ago, I could see something down the line that Sami Zayn set up Kevin Owens once again and him and Jey Uso turn heel again and be part of the bloodline. Like, oh, shit, we're all over this again. They screw over Cody Rhodes. Somebody's got to screw over Cody Rhodes big time, don't you think? And that's not just Brock Lesnar picking it up in F5 him. Doesn't it feel like somebody has to really, really backstab Cody Rhodes between now and WrestleMania? But it feels like the storyline is going to a point where Sami Zayn is going to have to choose Jey Uso or Kevin Owens. I hope they don't do that. But I kind of feel that's where they're going with this. Because Sami Zayn is trying to convince Kevin Owens tonight that Jey Uso should get a second chance. And Kevin Owens starts reading the Riot Act. You know, okay, so you want me to pretend that Jey Uso cost you championship match to Cody at WrestleMania. Okay, you want me to pretend that Jey Uso didn't do this here and didn't do this to me. And Kevin Owens isn't buying. And Kevin Owens says he trusts Sami Zayn and Cody Rhodes, but he's not trusting Jey Uso. And like I said earlier, it got stupid later on. Because what I just brought up happened around 8:20 p.m. tonight. After 10, they show a segment in the back where Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are still arguing about Jey Uso. Almost 2 hours later. It just, storyline purposes, it looks like children. Like, why are you that fucking butt hurt that Jey Uso, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a little bit much, and it's a little bit goofy, but it feels like they're going to get to that point where Sami Zayn's going to have to choose between the two. We saw a recap of Rhea Ripley and Raquel Rodriguez from last week, and we learned that they were both injured due to Nia Jax, which is a joke all in itself, which I thought was funny. I put this in a synopsis, and I think it's very well deserved. Kofi Kingston tonight beat Ivar, the Viking Raiders. Eric was not cleared. Somebody told me his blood pressure was a little bit too high. Somebody else told me that he was a little under the weather, and they just said, you take the night off. Because it was supposed to be a tag team match, I think, 2 out of 3 falls. I honestly thought this was Ivar's breakout match. He's had singles matches in the past, but they let Kofi Kingston and Ivar go about 10 minutes. The crowd was into this match. I was into this match. I'm not a fan of the Viking Raiders. In fact, as I was watching this match, I was saying to myself tonight, I'm like, man, Ivar showed me something that I wish the Viking Raiders as a whole were able to show us over the last couple of years. And it never seemed like it got to that point. It was a tremendous match. I thought this was Ivar's breakout match tonight. The problem is, as far as we know, the Viking Raiders are not splitting up. So you could have this breakout match, and that's all good and everything, but, you know, where's the opportunity going from here? Then I started thinking to myself, if you split the Viking Raiders, if you get rid of Eric and you keep Ivar, or you just split them and keep them both, what do you do with Ivar's look? Do you leave it? Do you change it? You know, that's the problem. You know, like having him go 10 minutes and show what he can do is great. But what do you do about the character? That's why, even though he had an awesome match tonight, I think they still remain as a whole. But Kofi Kingston beats him with the Trouble in Paradise. Excellent match. Some really good matches tonight. You know, some conclusions were less to be desired, you know, for various reasons. Then we get Chelsea Green and Piper Niven. They take on Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark in a non-title match. First, we get a little comedy, and Piper Niven and Chelsea Green are being interviewed in the back by Byron Saxton. I could have sworn Chelsea Green called him Barry, but he's interviewing him, and Chelsea Green says that her and Piper are friends. And I got to be honest with all of you out there. If someone questioned my friendship with someone else, I don't think the first thing they would say is, where am I from? Because Chelsea Green said that her and Piper were friends, and Piper's like, "Yo, we're friends? If we're friends, where am I from?" Like, I don't know. It's just, like, kind of stupid. Like, I can't be your friend and don't know where the fuck you came from. But, you know, Chelsea Green sold it good. Chelsea Green acted like she didn't know where Piper Niven came from, even though she's always wearing Scottish outfits, but Chelsea Green's supposed to be a little bit of an airhead. So she's like, Florida? And Piper Niven just walks off. So they have a match against Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark. And as the match is going on, Piper Niven gets knocked to the outside. And lo and behold, Nia Jax showed up. So we get the DQ victory for Piper Niven and Chelsea Green because Nia Jax attacked Piper Niven, throws her into the ring post, body slams her to the floor, and Nia Jax is not done. She goes in the ring. She takes out Zoe Stark. She takes out Chelsea Green, puts her in a corner, and then, you know, runs and dives and nails her with her ass, squashes her. Then she attacks her former tag team partner. And I had totally forgot that Shayna Baszler, quote unquote, broke Nia Jax's arm back in the day. I remember it now, but I totally forgot. I always thought we would see that stare down where they would possibly tease a reformation, but Nia Jax hits the Annihilator, the Banzai drop, on Shayna Baszler, and she walks off. And you hear Nia Jax say, I'll take out whoever I want. The division is on notice. So in 7 days' time, Nia Jax has taken out six women. Six. It'd be funny next week if they're all in the back and they all look all beat up and everything. So Nia Jax, hey, I personally think Nia Jax should show up in NXT. I think I mentioned that last week. Maybe, but the thing is, you don't want Nia Jax to get a championship opportunity this quick. So I don't want her to show up in NXT and try to take out Becky Lynch. But you almost feel like they may have to go in that direction. Don't know. But, you know, 7 days' time, Nia Jax, you know, looking good. You know, when you could hit a move, you know, unopposed, you know, anybody could look good. So then we get kind of the goofiness during the night. Damian Priest goes up to Jey Uso. He says, I want main event Uso in the Judgment Day. We could be the family you've been looking for all your life. Yes, he's got bloodline, but the Judgment Day, that could be the family he's looking for his whole life. Then Damian Priest says, I want an answer by the end of the night. And we all knew where this was going. But I thought it was so dumb. So dumb when Sami Zayn, towards the end of the night, is in the back. Kevin Owens is frustrated. Kevin Owens is like, you know, I'm out of here. Sami's like, I'll go get the car. Be right there. Sami Zayn tells Jey Uso, you know, you got to give him time. He'll come around. But then Sami Zayn, just in casual conversation, says to Jey Uso, you have a decision to make tonight. And Sammy walks off like, no big deal. I mean, you know, I know storyline can say, oh, Sammy knew the answer all along. But if you saw when Sami Zayn walked off, Jey Uso's got this look on his face like, shh, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Sami Zayn was so matter of fact about it. I mean, the Judgment Day took your fucking tag titles. The Judgment Day has been driving you nuts for months and months and months. Now the Judgment Day wants to take your friend and make him join it. And as a matter of fact, like, he taps him in the chest like, you have a decision to make tonight. And he walks off. Let's go get ice cream, Kevin. It was kind of goofy. Let's be honest. It was kind of goofy. All right. A match that a lot of people didn't like the outcome. And like I said at the beginning of the show, wrestling sometimes is supposed to break your heart. Sometimes wrestling is not going to give you the winners that you want to give. Chad Gable wants another opportunity at Gunther. Adam Pearce says, I can't just give it to you. Bronson Reed, for the impromptu match, shows up. You know, back of the line, little man. Oh, you want to call me little man? And Adam Pearce is like, you want to argue? Do it in the ring. So they go to the ring. And Bronson Reed wins. How did Bronson Reed win? Bronson Reed was going to give a senton to Chad Gable. Chad Gable put his knees up, blocked it. Great move. Problem is, you have Bronson Reed weight coming down on those knees. So Chad Gable had pain in his knees, and Chad Gable goes to nail a German suplex on Bronson Reed like he's done with Gunther that everybody is focused on, and Chad Gable's knee gives out. That allows Bronson Reed to get a little advantage, hits the tsunami, gets the win. Again, I know that feel-good moment. And I brought up the examples earlier, like Zelina Vega, Sami Zayn, Mustafa Ali, Chad Gable, I get it. But you got to look at the bigger picture. Chad Gable is not going to dethrone Gunther anytime soon. And I know what some of you are going to say, but he's got the record. But he's got the record. But he's got this. But he's got that. I get it. But you're not going to... You already made Gunther a little bit invincible. And then you made Gunther a little bit exposed when Chad Gable beat the clock. And then Chad Gable got the countout win. You know, that showed that Gunther can be defeated. But he's not being dethroned in that championship anytime soon. Got to look at the bigger picture. If Chad Gable wins that belt, and then Gunther moves on to somebody else, even if he moves on to Seth Rollins, who does Chad Gable feud with next? You know, you could come up with names like Drew and others, this and that, but, you know, Chad Gable is not going to suddenly have this extended run. He's got a tag team called Alpha Academy. Maybe Alpha Academy could become tag champs down the line, but Gunther right now is the champion. That's not changing. They are moving to Tommaso Ciampa versus Gunther, and Gunther will retain that championship against Ciampa as well. And as we saw tonight, Tommaso Ciampa, who wants Gunther, beat Giovanni Vinci. Giovanni Vinci dove off the middle rope and ate a knee to the mouth. The camera angle was beautiful. It looked great on TV. Ciampa with the Sicilian stretch. And Gunther is in the back watching this. And Gunther is not happy. He is pissed the fuck off. And Ludwig Kaiser reading Giovanni Vinci the riot act as they went up the rampway. And Giovanni Vinci is this close of being kicked out of Imperium. Ciampa has looked good the last 2 weeks. I'm still waiting for Gargano to be brought into the mix, which is happening. We just don't know when. Maybe he gets brought into the mix because Gunther ain't losing to Ciampa. Maybe Kaiser gets involved, and then maybe Gargano neutralizes Kaiser, and maybe that leads to something with Ciampa and Gargano, you know, DIY versus Kaiser and Vinci, and then maybe that's when Vinci will get kicked out. See, right now you got to keep Vinci with Kaiser a little bit more because there are some tag team matches coming up. And Vinci is the one that usually eats the pin. But Ciampa looked good tonight. Looked very good tonight. We did see a little bit of a backstage confrontation with Dragon Lee and Dominic Mysterio. Dragon Lee was with Adam Pearce. Dom is not happy that Rhea Ripley was not with him tonight because of what happened last week, and it seems like Adam Pearce didn't do anything about Nia Jax. And Dominic looks at Dragon Lee and says, I don't like guys with masks. It reminds me of my deadbeat dad. And they're going to have a match next week. So that leaves us really with the main event because we talked about Becky Lynch and Natalya a little bit earlier. Main event tonight, it was Jey Uso taking on Drew McIntyre. And, you know, listen, the storyline, is he going to join? Is he not going to join? You know, it felt a lot of bloodline-ish towards the end. Is, you know, is Jey still part of the bloodline? Is he not? Is he still with Jimmy? Remember the night that Jey was in the crowd? You know, it's the same thing. Will he, won't he? Will he, won't he? Will he, won't he? So they open up their match. And the crowd, you know, they're still into Drew McIntyre, no question. But you could feel that the crowd was in the favor of Jey Uso more than Drew McIntyre. Early on, Drew McIntyre beating the balls off of Jey Uso, hitting him with chomps, superplex off the top rope. Really one-sided match. Jey Uso started to get a little offense. And while this is going on, Drew McIntyre ends up getting the upper hand. Jey Uso gets knocked out to the outside of the ring towards the rampway. And here we go. Here we go. Judgment Day shows up at ringside. They're all rooting for Jey Uso. Damian Priest thinks that Jey Uso is joining the bloodline. And they're rooting him on. They're rooting him on. And you hear Dominic Mysterio, you know, Uso, come on. Finn Balor, you know, do it for the Judgment Day. Damian Priest rooting him on. And they're going at it, they're going at it. And then there was one point where Jey Uso was in the corner. And all the members of Judgment Day are trying to psych him up. They're trying to psych him up. And he gets up, and Damian Priest climbs the apron. And Jey Uso looks at Damian Priest, and Damian Priest thinks that Jey Uso just joined the Judgment Day in the middle of a match. Jey Uso goes and fist bumps Damian Priest, and then he super kicks him. And then Dominic Mysterio and Finn Balor, like, what the fuck just happened? They try to get involved. Jey Uso takes out Dom. Jey Uso takes out Finn Balor. And the minute Jey Uso turns around, he eats a claymore. Drew McIntyre nails him with a claymore. 1, 2, 3. Drew McIntyre is your winner. And Drew McIntyre, hey, Drew McIntyre, very bitter at Jey Uso for what the bloodline did to Drew McIntyre in the past. So this was revenge. This was Drew McIntyre getting a little bit of, you know, revenge for what happened before. But where this goes now is what happened after the match was over. Drew McIntyre walking up the rampway. Judgment Day still there. Remember, early on, around 10-ish, Kevin Owens, frustrated about the Jey Uso situation, him and Sammy are arguing, Jey Uso shows up, why don't you tell me to my face? And Kevin Owens is like, you know what, I'm out of here. He goes to the car. Sammy, you driving? Yeah, I'll be right there. They left the building. That's why they didn't make the save at the end of the night. So that makes sense. But Jey Uso is there left by himself. So the Judgment Day, minus Rhea Ripley, are beating the shit out of Jey Uso. Drew McIntyre is standing on the rampway watching this happen, and all the fans are cheering for Drew, make the save, make the save. As Jey Uso is getting beat down, Drew is, you know, thinking to himself, what should I do? What should I do? And what happens? Drew McIntyre says, fuck that. Turns around, walks away, stops, and in beautiful camera shot, heel mode, beautiful, he is torn. He is pissed. He is not going to help Jey Uso. He looks one last time, and he decides, nah, and he walks off. But who comes out to make the beautiful save? Cody Rhodes. Who else? Cody makes the save. Judgment Day get out of Dodge. Cody, the hero, saves Jey Uso. Drew McIntyre walks off in disgust. And again, this will ultimately lead to Matt Riddle back on TV. Bro, you know, I know we had our differences with Jay, but the Judgment Day, they're not good for Raw. How could you? And that's going to lead it a little bit further. But that pretty much was your episode of Raw tonight. Not a bad show. Got into a lot of good shit. Progressed a little bit for Fastlane. You know, Gunther and Ciampa is obviously going to happen. We'll see what Nakamura's stipulation will be next week. Are we going to get the Judgment Day and JD McDonagh versus Cody, Sammy, Kevin Owens, and Jey Uso, would they have a short enough time to put Drew McIntyre and Riddle? I don't think so. I think that's not enough time to do that. But remember, we still have some stuff going on next week. Next week we have Otis taking on Bronson Reed, two mammoth giants going at it. Next week also, as I said earlier, Dominic Mysterio is going to defend the NXT North American Championship against Dragon Lee. And we're getting this. The rematch. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus Finn Balor and Damian Priest for the undisputed WWE Tag Team Championship. Obviously, we're going to get some interference. JD McDonagh, maybe Dominic Mysterio, maybe Rhea Ripley, maybe all of the above. And we'll see what happens there. Obviously, there's going to be some storyline progression with that. So next week, you know, that leaves us, what, one more Raw leading into Fastlane? I think it leaves us one more Raw, right? Yeah, I think October 2nd would be the last Raw leading into Fastlane. So shit's going to have to materialize pretty quickly next week. So, all right. One thing I wanted to leave you with, but before that, I want to give two quick shout-outs, if you don't mind. Mr. No Matter What 11, DT, what will Dwayne Johnson do in his return? I apologize if you answered this question already. Thank you very much for the 7 spot. Right now is a one-off. You know, WWE isn't stupid. They knew the minute Dwayne Johnson goes on Pat McAfee and talks about Roman Reigns and then appears on SmackDown, all speculation begins. And all you have seen in 72 hours are people thinking that The Rock will now face Roman at WrestleMania. That The Rock, instead of Cody, should face Roman at WrestleMania. Is The Rock and Roman the bigger match? Of course. Is WrestleMania going to still sell out if the match doesn't happen? Of course. Does The Rock and Roman Reigns have to happen at WrestleMania 40? No. Could it happen possibly before that? Why not? Why not? I mean, you feel it's a WrestleMania quality match. But, you know, like I said to a few people over the weekend, Cody's got to finish the story at Mania. That story's got to have a Mania finish. Not a Survivor Series finish. Not a Royal Rumble finish. Not the night after WrestleMania finish. I don't want to see... Some people are coming up with, oh, Roman and Rock should main event night one, and the winner takes on Cody for night two. And I'm like, I don't want Roman, The Rock, and Cody Rhodes hogging up both main events for night one and night two. I don't think that's fair for the regular roster. So it's a fun debate. I totally respect anybody who thinks that that match should happen instead of Cody and Roman. I just personally feel you don't flush down the toilet 2 years worth of storyline because you get The Rock for a few months. Plus, yeah, there's a Writers Guild strike, and that has some to do with it. But how much? How much? I mean, I kind of make a bet with you all right now that we don't see The Rock back on SmackDown for the next month. I think, at minimum, maybe Saudi Arabia. But I don't even know if The Rock would go to Saudi Arabia. But I will bet you 4 weeks from now, we will go back on the show and say, Rock didn't show up again. I don't think he's going to show up again. So they knew what they were doing. But for people out there that think that they brought The Rock back to help the TV negotiations, you don't hotshot it for 1 week and think that everything is resolved in a TV deal. It doesn't work that way. But I don't think, to answer your question, no matter what, I don't think The Rock is back on any even part-time basis. You know, if he's going to do something at Mania, then maybe we'll see him around Elimination Chamber time. But right now, I don't see it. I don't see it at all. So thank you for that. Lone Spectre, thank you for the 10 spot, my friend. Longtime listener, doesn't interact with the chat. Went to the show tonight. It was a fun show. When Natty came out for the open challenge, everyone in his row groaned and booed. I understand why. Because Becky's promo was a little bit misguided. Because on one side of her mouth, you know, besides wanting to bring the NXT championship to bigger heights, she was talking about giving opportunities for those stars of tomorrow to help bring them up, you know, which is what the NXT championship should be to focus on. I personally think, me, what I would have done tonight is I would have had Becky Lynch come out tonight, not wrestle. I would have Becky Lynch come out tonight, cut her promo that she won the championship. And you know what, my friends? I just remembered something that I really caught my attention with Becky's promo tonight. And if you go back and watch Raw, that segment with her tonight, I'm sure on Twitter there's got to be a two-minute clip of her promo. Watch it, because it caught my eye. When Becky, she made a remark and she said that winning the NXT championship was not on her bingo card. And then she said that she realizes that when opportunities come, you got to take those opportunities. Like, she was given one of those John Cena inspirational things. If you listen to the crowd when she talked about taking an opportunity and winning it, the crowd did not react all that much to it. And then when she said that she was a Grand Slam champion, I swear to you, go listen to the crowd reaction. It was mild. When she said that she was now the Grand Slam champion and lifted that belt up, that crowd did not react very heavy at all. I mean, it was pretty polite, and it's noticeable. So when she's cutting the promo, what I would have done tonight is she should have announced that she is going to defend the NXT Women's Championship tomorrow on NXT. Open challenge. Let's see who grabs it. Of course, storyline, you know, you would think Tiffany Stratton has to be the one to step up. But you could have an angle in the back where, you know, Tiffany Stratton, you know, somebody lays her out, or she, you know, gets into a brawl with someone, and you know, whatever. Or you could have a whole bunch of women come out and they all want a shot at Becky Lynch. I would not have had Becky Lynch defend, have a first title defense against somebody who is a big-time veteran. You know, you want to give the opportunity to somebody who is up and coming. Originally, they were going with Tegan Knox, guys. And I guess, in my opinion, and I'm pretty sure I'm right on this, I think whoever's decision it was, whether it was Vince or it was Triple H, Kevin Dunn, Bruce Prichard, whoever you want to choose, I think whoever it was, no offense to Tegan Knox, I think that they thought to themselves, wait a minute, if Becky issues the open challenge, Tegan Knox comes out, that crowd ain't fucking reacting at all. That crowd is not going to give a shit. So they decided, you know what, let's give it to Natty, because Natty is a veteran and everybody respects her, and she just, you know, did double duty in India, so give her a little opportunity. I don't agree with it, but I think the crowd would have reacted a little bit more if Natty came out instead of Tegan Knox. There would have been crickets if Tegan Knox would have come out. And how does that look? Becky Lynch wins the NXT championship a week earlier, holds it up, Grand Slam champion, issues an open challenge, the first person comes out, there's no reaction. That's personally what I think. So just pretty mild as far as the reaction goes. But I totally understand. I don't think people were booing the fact that Natty came out. I think they were booing the fact that just some random, and I'm not saying that Natty's a random person, but it is a random choice. You know, somebody in the back, why didn't Nia Jax come out? You know, she's out, puts the whole division on notice. Why didn't she come out? Again, why wasn't Tiffany Stratton there? You could have had Natty take on Becky. If you insist on having a match tonight, Tiffany Stratton sitting front row, you know, Becky could have taunted her. Becky, she could have been sitting front row the entire Raw, because that's what she's done the past couple of weeks, and she could be seething when Becky Lynch is in that ring. And Becky could hold that championship up, and Tiffany Stratton is in the front row, and she can't do a damn thing about it. And during the match, she hits the ring and has a DQ finish. I personally would have done that, but they didn't. So at the end of the day, that's what matters. They didn't. So, yeah, I agree with you, JS. It feels right now there's only like one or two matches for Fastlane, but SmackDown on Friday, we should see some, you know, headway with some matches. And I think, do not rule out the possibility of John Cena maybe in a match. You know, it is still almost 3 weeks away. And John Cena, you know, he's back, and yeah, he's not wrestling much at all, but, you know, you put Cena on Fastlane, even if it ends up being a tag match. The only reason why I'm not so sure is because I don't know if Solo Sikoa and Jimmy Uso should be tag teaming yet. Like, something just doesn't jive with me. And remember, the Judgment Day are trying to get Jimmy Uso as well. So what happens? Jimmy Uso, where's the interaction there? So is the Judgment Day suddenly going to ignore Jimmy Uso because Jey Uso did what he did? Jimmy Uso is still a heel, technically, but Jimmy Uso isn't going to join the Judgment Day. So if he says no to the Judgment Day, that's a babyface decision. So they're all screwed up right now. They are really screwed. That Bloodline storyline hit a fucking brick wall. The best thing that they could do is get Roman Reigns back in a week or two. I personally think we will see Roman Reigns within the next couple of weeks. Some people think we won't see Roman Reigns until Saudi Arabia or a week before. I disagree. I think they're going to announce Roman Reigns back within 2 weeks. I feel like they got to. It's just hit a brick wall. And John Cena, I mean, again, it wasn't L.A. Knight and The Miz outdrew Cena on Friday. So, you know, you got to do something more with Cena. Cena's there every week now for the next month or so. So you got to do something. I think it's got to lead to a match. So shout out to Tristan Sloan. He talked last week about his mom. You know, she's had some serious issues with blood in her lungs. And good news is they got rid of her severe pneumonia, which is very good. Get out of pneumonia. You know, you are on, I don't want to say easy street, but pneumonia, I know, have done a lot of people in. You know, I've had family members experience pneumonia. When you have a bad heart, you have bad lungs with it. I mean, that's could be devastating. But very good news. Just let her rest, let her heal, medication, and I want to hear even better news the next time you update us. So much love, much love. Garth says that Charlotte is a Grand Slam champion. Oh, listen, there are other championships out there. I've joked that Asuka's title and Rhea Ripley's title, when Becky wins one of those, she's going to be the quintuple champion, and I spelled quintuple with two N's. And some of you out there still don't even understand why I say that. So write it down or type it, and you'll know why I say it that way. Listen, there's going to be other, you know, champions in that category. But all right, guys, we are over 2 hours tonight. And, yeah, it's 1:20 in the morning here, and I got to get up at 6:30, and I still got editing and shit to do here, so I got to get this online and go to bed. But I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. Much love. If you enjoyed the show, you know, as everybody else says, because it does help, smash that thumbs up. If you're not a subscriber, consider subscribing. It's free. If you want to become a channel member, definitely do so. We'll be doing a predictions contest in the very near future. And tomorrow's Patreon show will be posted for channel members here as well. And if you are a Patreon member, you could join me live tomorrow night. I'll be live tomorrow night at 10:05. And the watch party. So I'll even be in the watch party at 8 o'clock. And the next time I'll be here with the video will be Saturday for the Don Tony show. So we have a couple of shows in the middle. Wednesday night Dynamite, you know, I haven't even thought about yet. I got to see what happens with Grand Slam. I actually was invited this time to go to Arthur Ashe. Somebody who actually works, you know, for AEW actually sent me an invite, but I can't go. I actually have to work until 6. By the time I get home, by the time, you know, I get out to, you know, not really Long Island, but to, you know, Flushing, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. Especially spur of the moment. I should have, you know, if this was told to me a month ago, I would have planned it. But maybe the next time AEW comes to Arthur Ashe, I'll go. So, but I always shout out all my friends that are going to be going, so. All right, guys, I'm out of here. Much love.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcast.
That was a little bit abrupt and rude. I didn't do that on purpose. So I will try it once again. Everyone be well. Good night, and I'll catch you all again later this week.
Sure. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who claim they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.